Hi, and welcome to AusFox Rocks, an Australian-based Microsoft Visual Fox Pro podcast. We're recording on January 10, 2006. Thanks for joining us. Well, thanks for joining us for episode 2 of AusFox Rocks. My name is Craig Bailey, and sitting opposite me is my co-host for the show, Scott Scovell. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hi, Craig. It's great to be here.
Coming up in the show tonight, we've got a few topics such as the surge. We'll be discussing the recent surge that VFP seems to be experiencing. Also, how you can help promoting VFP. We also look at SQL Server in the VFP Developers Toolkit, usual roundup of VFP news, plus our other regular spots. What's the aim of AusFox Rocks? Just a quick recap. We have three main aims. We want to keep the Australian VFP audience informed. We also like to highlight news and events and provide interviews with VFP developers. We're going to cover two of those in this show. No interview tonight, but that'll be coming up in the coming weeks. Well, before we get started, Scott, did you have a good break over Christmas and New Year?
Had a very good break. Very relaxing.
Yeah. What was the weather like up your way?
Very hot. Yeah. I think we peaked on New Year's Day at about 46 degrees,
yeah,
which is well up over 100. So Fahrenheit. So
yeah,
but it was pretty good. A lot of food, a couple of books.
Yeah,
plenty of code written.
Oh yeah,
it was a great break.
Oh, good one. Yeah, I actually took a bit of a break. I felt a little bit overcommitted towards the end of last year, so I just wanted to chill out and relax. I read a whole bunch of books too, so it was good. Nice break, and it's good to be back into it. So let's talk about the surge. And the surge is real, and this seems to be a growing acceptance, I'll say, of VFP. And let's look back over 2005 at just some of the things that have put this in place. So I guess it all started with the Sedna roadmap being released, Ken Levy and the team announcing their plans for VFP coming up, and Sedna being released in 2007. But we're seeing a lot of interest in that, and then later in the year we had Southwest Fox amongst other conferences, and that was particularly well received by the community. And on that occasion, Sedna X was announced, Craig Boyd's initiative. Others involved now as well.
It really felt like there was a snowball happening, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then towards the end of the year we had some favourable press. We had the Mary Jo Foley article, of course. We also had the TOBI, or I'm not actually sure how it's pronounced, index, and only an index, of course, so we probably shouldn't place too much emphasis on that. But yeah, it seemed to indicate that VFP was growing in popularity, up from 51 to 20, I think, so that's heartwarming. It was good. And of course, we've also got this sense of many of the senior managers in companies now are old Fox developers, and they have a real affection for the product. So you may actually see a bit more acceptance or just understanding of the product in those circles as well. So it's definitely alive, as I think the Mary Jo Foley article indicated, and now it's growing. People are hearing about it. It's growing in acceptance. And I just wonder if we're reaching a kind of VFP tipping point.
Yeah, it's something that traditionally Fox has been commended for. I remember hearing stories 20, 15 years ago where the Fox community was a really active and really sociable community getting together. The conference numbers were huge.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering if, and I'm hoping that this is the start of bringing back the good old days.
Yeah, that's right. And numbers, I mean, conferences are notoriously difficult because there's so many of them in, not obviously outside of VFP and other products that we're using. So there's, I guess, competition, and you have to pick and choose your conference as well. But there'd be definite advantages if the conference market, I guess, for VFP grew, and that's up to the community to put their weight behind it.
Yeah, and you mentioned tipping point.
Yeah, well, this is one of those books. Oh, it's been around for a while. I think it's 5 or 6 years old now, but a very famous book about this idea of what changes something from just a marginal thing, event, anything from shoe sales to crime to whatever, into being kind of an epidemic, he calls it, in the book. And I just wonder if we're kind of just on the cusp of that with VFP. You know, it's sort of been lying dormant there, or not dormant, but you know what I mean, sort of there. And now here's the time where maybe 2006 is where it just takes off.
So what are the signs? What are we going to go and look for here?
Yeah, well, I guess the three main things he talks about, Gladwell talks about in his book, needs to be a message for starters, and I think the message for VFP is that it's mature, it's reliable, but most importantly, it's alive. You know, how many times you talk to people and you say, oh, yeah, I use Visual Fox Pro, and they say, oh, is it still around? I thought I'd died out. So it's not a discussion of technical merit. It's about, oh, is it still there? And that's the message, and I think that's what's getting out. People are starting to hear, oh, yeah, it's there. The second thing, of course, is connectors, and this is really the way we look at how the message gets out there. Okay, we've got a message to say. How does it actually get out?
This is transportation.
Yeah. How does it get to the masses? And, of course, we've got all the blogs coming up. That's been a big impact. We've got speakers at conferences, of course. We've got user groups, we've got articles, so and magazines, still going strong on Fox Pro. And then I guess the third thing, but the most important thing, is an understanding of context. And I won't labour this point too much, but people have actually got to get involved. You know, sometimes I think everyone sits back and assumes someone else is going to talk about how great VFP. Oh, no, Microsoft will do that. Or, oh, you know, Ken Levy's job is to do that. But really, the context is we all need to get involved. Otherwise, everyone's going to be thinking that someone else is going to be doing it. And this might be the impetus we need. And it looks like people are starting to get involved.
So what should we be doing to get involved? What you mentioned some of the tagging of sites and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. How can we promote VFP, I guess, is the question. And I guess ideas come to mind. There is, as you say, the tagging of websites and blog posts. I mean, it's...
So this is for the search engines to
pick up. That's right. This is what the Googles and the Yahoos and whatever's use to index the sites and return search results. So you should be using meta tags and things in your sites that refer to VFP. And William Sanders had an excellent article in FoxWiki, and it's in the show notes, a link to it, just about how you can go around basically getting VFP Googled for promoting VFP. The second big thing that I would say, this is really important for the VFP community, is in terms of promoting it, is the perception of your products that you build with it. It's no surprise that people judge your development tool by the products you actually build with it. And this whole idea of perception, I like to say perception is everything. We'll be discussing that in an upcoming show, so it's very important.
So this is moving away from the defense, or my app does everything and it does it really quickly and functionally it's perfect.
That's right.
But we've got to be mindful of the way it looks and the way users feel about using it.
Absolutely. People do judge a book by its cover, so it doesn't matter how good a read your book is. If it's badly marketed, the cover's not there, then no one's going to read it. So I think the days of arguing about technical merit in our apps are gone. They're no longer needed. But it's about making them look great and attractive to clients. And the third thing I think we can be doing promoting VFP is just educating the developer community, you know. At our, say, VFP user groups, we often talk about other products, SQL Server, .NET, you name it, Crystal Reports, and we talk about those in a FoxPro user group. And so there's no reason why in other user groups, you know, that we attend, like the .NET groups, and that where it's appropriate, we talking about FoxPro and what it can be doing there, not in the kind of annoying pushing a square peg into a round hole kind of manner, but just in it, like, this is a real part of the development toolkit.
So. Yeah, I think Andrew Coates made the point on the last episode about not only get along to your FoxPro user group, but get along to the SQL user group.
Absolutely.
And join in there.
That's right. These are the products we're using, so don't feel like you have to be silent in those about FoxPro. And just the last one is more of a fun one, is promos. And did you see Craig Boyd's promos?
Yes, I caught the a flash animation, sorry?
Yeah, I actually don't know how he built them, but yeah they were great, weren't they? Just, yeah.
What was the promo slogan?
Yeah, oh, well, the first one was more before breakfast than your other tools do in a day. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And I had the picture of that that breakfast item. Now, I wasn't familiar with
what
breakfast.
What is that item? Yeah.
Being, you know, an Aussie, we got no idea. It didn't look like Weet-Bix or Vegemite.
What and, was that?
There is no other breakfast item besides.
Yeah, gee. Anyway, that can be another discussion. We need to investigate that one. But yeah, the promos were great. And so, I don't know, they're kind of fun. Really, we need to be thinking about how we can use those kind of things. And Andrew McNeil had a few ideas on his blog about what we can be doing with them. But I think, you know, they're great. And they're just looking at incorporating those into our marketing and things like that.
Yeah, I love those fun things. Recently at the Australian Tech Ed up on the Gold Coast, they had a little promo where you'd basically manipulate this little ID badge image.
Right.
And I remember submitting my little one with the... with
absolutely
something that looked very much like the Microsoft Fox logo but actually wasn't.
No.
Thank you, lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and submitted that as my my little promo.
Your so tech ed flair, that's right. That was flair. Great. And I think you got a prize for that as well, so that was good to see.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, and well, speaking of tech ed, and you remember the recent Ready launch, not that I want to make a big thing about this, but they were just, you know, there was videos and rock and you know, all these promos. There was plenty of hoo-ha going on about .NET, and people love that stuff. I mean, they don't come away going, wow, the technical merits of that product are high, but they do come away with a perception of, yep, this is cool, we've got to use it. So that's, I guess, part of how we can use promos in promoting VFP. Talking about the surge we're experiencing in VFP, I'm primarily thinking of a growth in acceptance of the product from clients, the other developer communities as well. Not so much in growth in developer numbers. I don't see more developers coming to VFP, or I think it's unlikely, or I was thinking, say, uni students. I don't think they're coming to VFP. But you made the interesting point when we were discussing this earlier that there is possibility for more VFP developers, perhaps from the VB market.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking that there could be a potential here with the VB.NET product mature now. Mm-hmm. There could be a VB vacuum.
Right. You
know, those VB developers, the traditional VB developers that got left behind for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So VFP is an attractive sideways move, if you like,
right,
for those developers.
Okay.
So increasing numbers by taking up some of those VB developers. There's another sort of point to it as well, and that's that there's some clients out there who traditionally have been looking at the VB products, are suddenly forced to look at the VB.NET products and maybe finding those a little bit more expensive.
Right.
So VFP is going to become much more attractive to those type of clients,
right,
as well. So
absolutely.
We've got potentially both a movement for developers from traditional VB into VFP,
yes,
and clients that could be now looking at VFP solutions.
Yeah, great point. Let's introduce a new segment to the show. We're calling this AusFox Rocks Business Tips. And in this show, we're looking at, very quickly, one tip for increasing your VFP market. And there's many ways to increase your VFP market, and as we've mentioned previously in upcoming shows, we'll be looking at the whole perception thing for your product. But this show, very quickly, just wanted to chat about the role of SQL Server in the VFP developer's toolkit. And Scott, do you think SQL Server is important for the VFP developer?
I think it's becoming increasingly important,
okay,
actually. Mainly because in the past, we as technical advisors or software vendors to our clients have been promoting SQL Server as a solution to some of the higher end needs they might have had,
right,
regarding security or database integrity, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
But now we're starting to see a flow backwards.
Okay.
So we're starting to see clients suggesting or demanding,
right,
that we put in a SQL Server or an Oracle solution into our solution. So it's becoming increasing for the VFP developer to be aware of what's happening with SQL and having the skills to meet that sort of demand.
Okay, so what do you think the main reasons are that clients are acquiring SQL Server or Oracle as a backend?
I think it's coming down to compliance,
right,
from the IT manager.
Yeah.
So we're looking at things like the corporate infrastructure standards. Mm-hmm. Remembering your solution is just one, possibly just one of many solutions within that enterprise.
Yeah, sure.
And they're looking to standardize the way they maintain both their infrastructure, so the hardware that it's running on, plus also maybe the database administration and that sort of thing as well.
Okay. And what other areas of compliance are there? I guess what, company reporting and things
like
that?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, they may have multiple databases spread across different locations and that sort of thing. So some of the things the clients are starting to inquire about now is centralized reporting.
Right.
So take data out of your system, but data out of other systems that we've got in our enterprise and do this centralized reporting.
Sure.
So there might be issues of replication that you might need to overcome there with remote sites.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things like integrating with other solutions within their enterprise as well. So bringing all the data for this centralized reporting.
Right. You know, the number of times that we've spoken to companies, or even I've heard this come out at user groups many times, is you go in and you say, oh, look, our product, it's got SQL Server at the back end. They actually don't even care that the front end's written in VFP or what it's kept. As long as the back end is kept in SQL Server and meets their compliance requirements, they're comfortable.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got basically two points. One is you can attract new business by flouting SQL Server as a product feature.
Yeah.
But also you can hang on to existing business when the client comes to you and says, well, our situation's changed now and we need to have a SQL solution in here.
Right. And now it's time for AusFox Rocks News. Well, just two items of news this show. The first is to talk about Anatoly's Win32 offline reader. I don't think it's been released yet. We were just looking at a preview last week. What do you think of this tool, Scott?
Oh, it's a great tool.
It's
great. It actually increases functionality of his original Win32 site, which is a hard task.
I mean, we love his site. It's so good, so carefully researched and put together. It's an excellent site. What are some of the great features of the offline reader?
Well, some of the things that I think are quite sexy are the way the content is marked up. So even the example code is marked up. So I'm looking through my Win32 API function.
Yep.
It's giving me some example code on how to use this function.
Yep.
But then buried in the example code is a call to, say, another Win API.
Yeah.
And it's marked up. So I just click on the hyperlink and away off I go there. It's just really well presented.
Yeah, it's great. Easy to search. I mean, what can we say? Look out for it. It'll be coming out soon. And if you're not using the Win32 site, I think as we said before, shame on you. But here's even more reason. It's a great site. Membership's cheap annually. And this, I don't know what pricing for this will be. But look, it's well worth having. Look out for it. Check out his site and start using it. Now, the second thing we just wanted to mention is the return of the Great Lakes Great Database Workshop. That's coming up in April. The thing I liked about this is very clearly Will saying, look, it's not for beginners. You've got to be advanced. It's full on content. Get along and, you know, increase your level of knowledge. And I think that's really what we should be aiming at throughout the community in all spheres, user groups, conferences, the articles we put up. We'll be talking in a later show just about how people can get up and running with VFP, learning VFP, if you like. But for the advanced users, and I mean that is the majority of the users, this is a mature developer community, these are exactly the great things that we need. So yeah, big thumbs up for the Wolfest returning there. And some news on our own front. Scott, you've been working hard on FoxTabs and Solution Explorer. Do you want to give us a quick update where we're up to for those who might be interested?
Yeah, that's right. FoxTabs was released in beta.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been going for a couple of weeks now, getting some great feedback from the community.
Just one small issue to be resolved there before we get it out, but that's all been documented well on your blog.
Yeah, that's right. We had an issue with bind event and the compile, so it looks like when we're binding to the Windows message events and FoxPro's compiling, we get FoxPro crashing. So we're yet to get to the bottom of that, but that'll be coming through. as will be VFP Solution Explorers. So we've been working hard over the last month or so now, getting the framework and the design sorted. We're up to our chins in code, and some of the cool things we've been working in there is like a XML serializer and some configuration and logging classes. So that's all good fun, and it'll be all good takeaway too for those who get on the site and start downloading it when we release it.
And now it's time for our AusFox Rocks Tip of the Month.
This month's Tip of the Month is the scatter name and gather name function.
Okay, yeah.
This is some of the work we've been doing in the XML serializer.
Right.
So what we found is with the scatter name, we can not only scatter into an 80 Foxboro object, but we can scatter into a COM object instance that we have running.
Very cool.
So this is a great tool to use when we want to save the state of a running COM object instance we've got and restore it at a later time.
Oh, okay, cool. So just quickly take us through scatter and gather. You're using the name parameter, obviously, with that.
Yeah, that's right. So we'd have a running COM object instance, and we create a cursor of property values of that COM object instance we want to save.
Right, so we've got to define the cursor with matching property names.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And then we'll use the gather with the name clause, so we can gather name and then our object instance or our object reference, and that will gather the properties from that object instance into the cursor that we defined earlier.
Right.
We can then save that cursor to a DBF or using the XML adapter class to an XML file.
Yep.
And then later on in our program, when we want to restore the state of that COM object instance, we recreate our cursor, either from opening a DBF that we saved earlier or again using the XML adapter to create our cursor from the XML file. And then with our object reference for the COM object, we can then scatter using the name clause, so scatter name instance, and restore the property values from our saved cursor.
And now it's time for the AusFox Rocker of the Month. This month the award goes to Andrew McNeil for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, first of all, he's a regular, consistent, reasoned voice in the VFP community through things like his blog and, of course, The Fox Show, which is a great podcast which has heavily influenced us.
That's right. He's done a lot of articles in Fox Advisor, both highly technical and also for the new developer to Visual Fox Pro.
Yeah, that's right. And also he's now got the Learning VFP site, which is a good collection point of a whole bunch of resources for that new developer that you mentioned.
That's right. He's also a great supporter of some of the VFP initiatives out there. I know he's helped us a lot with our various projects, but he's also very active on the SetnerX project, and he's always posting suggestions or replying to other initiatives that have been posted up there.
Yeah, and I guess lastly, he's an accomplished conference speaker as well. He's put a lot of effort into his presentations. I know I saw him at when I was at Vegas 2 years ago. Very helpful. So there you go. Congratulations. Well done. And thanks for all your input, Andrew McNeil. Yeah, this show's AusFox Rocker of the Month. We're going to call this next segment Question Time. Where we just pose a question and potential answers. So the question really is about upgrades. Should we upgrade to VFP 9 and should we upgrade to the Service Pack 1 that's come out? So what are your thoughts on this, Scott? Do you reckon we should be encouraging all the VFP developers to upgrade to VFP 9, first of all?
To VFP 9, my answer is yes. We should be upgrading to VFP 9. But just to clarify, I'm not a big fan of upgrading for the sake of upgrading.
Right.
So unless there is real advantage to do so, I wouldn't just blindly say, yes, you got to upgrade, there's a new product, go and get it, put it in action.
Right, absolutely. So what are some of the advantages of upgrading to VFP 9?
Well, to upgrade to VFP 9, I think it's necessary because we gain so much performance increase with our SQL Engine performance.
Yeah,
so we've got extra functionality as well. We've got the whole new reporting engine. just some of the other minor but big enhancements are things like the anchor property, something small like that.
You know, I just want to say, for that reason alone, I think you should upgrade, because the improvement in perception, and there's that word again, and we will be talking about this in an upcoming show, for that alone, you should be going to VFP9. But anyway, I interrupt, please.
This is with your bias to all those lazy resizing classes out there, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, don't get me started. And look, we've all written a resizing class that we spend far too much time trying to work. Yeah, it works. Yeah, anyway. For that, yeah, get it for that.
That's right. So getting back to upgrading more in general, there's certain types of upgrading that I... when we come to talking about Windows updates and that sort of thing, I'm particularly against setting a production server with automatic updates on.
Absolutely.
We had a got bitten quite badly with XP SP2 for Windows XP. And, I mean, that's a perfect scenario where you shouldn't just have your production server sitting with Windows updates.
Right.
It's going to be changing your known environment where you know your solution's running nicely and working.
Yeah.
And it might just tip something and all of a sudden she's not going. So don't upgrade for the sake of upgrading.
Right.
But upgrade to VFP9 because there's some really good advantages to do so.
Yeah, and if I could just have the final point on that. One thing that I really liked, and this is well promoted for the product, it was so reliable and stable. I mean, there were no issues. I've had no issues with VFP9. I mean, I'm sure there have been issues, but for us, and we do a lot of work with VFP, it was a no-brainer. Everything worked. It was stable. It was reliable. It was a good upgrade.
And that's a good point too, because now that Surface Pack 1's out for VFP9, the question that could be posed is, okay, so should I go from 9.0 to SP1?
Yeah, and what do you think?
And for those reasons I outlined earlier, is there real advantage for you to do so? I mean, you mentioned before, 9.0 was a very stable product. Unless there's something on the bug list on SP1 that's going to get you over the line on some trouble that you have, no, there's no compelling reason to go to SP1.
Yeah.
The risks are that it could break something. So if... on the other hand, if you're going from 8 into 9, definitely make that extra step and go 8 into 9 SP1.
Well, isn't it the case that a lot of people hold off until the first service pack comes out just as a matter of kind of business policy? They didn't go to 9 because it was 9.0. But now that there's service pack 1, maybe that's the extra step that will bring them over there.
Yeah, that could be the trigger to bring them through.
All right, so there's our opinions. What are your thoughts? Anyway, let us know. And now it's time for our link of the month. And this month it goes to Universal Thread. And I know this will come as a surprise to many because you would assume it's so well known, right? Well, we're actually surprised that in user groups, sometimes you mention Universal Thread and people haven't heard of it. So if that's you and you haven't heard of it, we want to give you an outline of just five of the coolest things about Universal Thread so that you should be heading over there straight away. First of all, it's a great online forum. I mean, any question you've got, if it's not already been answered in the extensive knowledge base, you just post it on there and they've got experts giving a reply almost instantaneously. I think there's some of these gurus just sit there waiting.
That's right.
I mean, they're amazing and they're knowledgeable. They're not time wasters. Second is the news page, not only the VFP news, but the general news. I really like whoever edits that and the selection they do because it's my first point of call for IT news in general. It's always of interest to me. Now, thirdly, they've got a downloads page, which is great. It's a number of downloads that you can get there that have accumulated over the years. Just about anything you can think of, it's there. They have a great user group tracker, which is helpful for being notified of upcoming user groups and the topics that will be on there. And then finally, the conference coverages, I think, it's a fantastic way to stay informed. Say, take last year, we couldn't make it along to Southwest Fox. So there we were, glued to Craig Boyd's coverage and all the coverages that go on.
And I'm hoping they have a diary for Woolfest coming up as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Great way to stay informed. So there you go, link of the month, Universal Thread. And into more general news now, Scott, you would have seen this Microsoft Certified Architect site. I mean, it's still only in beta. It's coming out later this year, and hopefully we'll get it in Australia. What's your thoughts on a program like this?
Yeah, it's quite unique. It's not your usual multiple choice exam format.
Mm-hmm.
It's invitation only, for instance. You submit a dossier of your work that you've done before, some of your architectural designs and that sort of thing. There's a panel of peers that sit there and assess you and mentor you throughout the course of the program, which spans about 6 months.
Yeah, it's quite an intensive course, and one that I think you're not going to con your way through this. And how do you think this is a good thing for businesses and software development in general, or is this overkill?
No, I think it's great. The emphasis on architecture, particularly by Microsoft in the last 18 months, 24 months, is the step in the right direction. I think it sort of goes a little bit to your perception opinion. Coming along with this program, this Certified Architect program, Microsoft set up a architecture resource center as well, and they're putting stacks of great content out there in the architecture space. So I think there's even a podcast up there to deliver some of this great tech content and get developers thinking more and more about architecture and good design. You may be aware of the patents and practices site that's up there as well. That's not new, but that's been pumping out some great content for architects and senior developers.
Yeah, right. And well, this is not specific to any development environment, although, or even Microsoft for that matter, although you'd imagine there's been a lot of this has come out of the whole .NET framework and of course the patents and practices is primarily drawn in from that area. So do you think this is actually something that can be applied specifically to VFP? Is this the kind of thing that VFP developers should be getting interested in?
Yeah, I think it does. It's architecture and design is necessary in any software development. Being in VFP doesn't exclude you from that. So this is something that you will be concerned about. When it comes to, again, if you're a small software vendor and you're thinking, no, well, this is for the big end of town. I can't afford to be going into that sort or be paying attention to that those type of movements. No, you have to think again, because architecture goes to everything about your product. So particularly when it comes to architecture, you might not think you're doing the role of an architect or in the software house if you're the sole developer. But whenever you're thinking about infrastructure or your classing and your frameworks and that sort of stuff, you've got the role of architect on. So it pays to be aware of what's happening in the community. And the Microsoft Resource Center is a great place to start and to keep in contact with what's going on with architecture.
Just one other item of general news. Most of you probably would have seen that Guy Kawasaki's started blogging, very famous technology evangelist in the past. But a link there in the show. He's got some good posts, but the one I liked was his 10, 20, 30 presentation rules. So check that one out. Useful for anyone presenting and trying to market your business. And stay posted to his blog. The thing I like about him, I can't believe this, you'll see his posts posted from, you know, when he's sort of doing the shopping or he just happens to be in a hotel. And man, I wish I could write like him. It's like this, you know, really polished little gem that he's put up, and it gives the impression he's just, you know, knocked it together while he's in the shopping queue in, you know, his supermarket. But anyway, it's good reading, very useful for anyone in the software business. So we commend it to you. That's it for episode 2 of AusFox Rocks. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next show.